fixing something, looking for something. He's back. He's walking up the stairs and he notices there's that little board. You know what? You know the board, and he gets distracted. And I was just like, wow, that's me. That is me. I get distracted just like that. And I know you've been distracted. You've probably been distracted at work. You've been distracted at home. You're probably distracted right now at church. Maybe your phone's going off. Somebody's, you know, texting you. Your alarm for lunch or something is going off, you know, and you're getting distracted maybe even right now. Everyone goes through distractions. Maybe putting that bike together, assembling that desk. Who's assembled the dreaded desk, right, with the instructions and the little dials and the little glue? And you're just like, you just get distracted. It's easy to get distracted there. But I'll tell you what, it's one thing to get distracted from a simple thing like maybe the honey-do list or the desk or the bike. But it's another thing to get distracted, say, from finishing that college application. Or distracted from, you know, the project that you have at work that you've got to complete and the deadline is in 2 days. Okay? Or getting distracted and really not doing what the doctor asks you to do because you got to make those changes in your life so that your health could be better. But you're just too distracted to make the changes. That's one thing. You know, there's some simple distractions, but there's some other distractions that we just can't really afford. And still, there's another even bigger distraction, I think. How about just being a distracted husband? A distracted wife? A distracted parent? How about just being distracted from the very purpose that you were set for in this life? How about just being distracted from the very one who set you on this earth to do the very purpose that God set you to do in this world? I get distracted when I pray. I do. We're reading a book together. Our staff here at church, Glenn Durham gave us a book for Christmas from Max Lucado called Before Amen, and it's all on prayer. And one of the things he talks about in the first chapter is that, you know, he gets distracted in prayer. And I do too. I was like, yes, I do too, Max. I get distracted too. I could be praying. I'll start thinking about all kinds of different things. Somebody make me feel good and raise your hand if that's you too. Yeah. You just get distracted. Just all kinds of distractions, especially today. You know, just all kinds of things happening, all kinds of things going on. And the fact is that when we set out for a big project or even a small project and get distracted, usually that project isn't completed. And all we do is end up disheartened. Disillusioned, disheartened, because, you know, the thing that we set out to start never got completed. And so I want to tell you real quick this morning that you are here for a reason this morning. You're not here by chance. You just didn't happen to get up this morning and make your way here. You're not here just by chance. There's a reason for why you have to be here this morning and why you have to hear what God's going to say from Nehemiah 6. So what I'm going to urge you to do is, if you've still got the sleepies, right? I get the sleepies at church. If you still got the sleepies, just shake them off. Just shake them off. Okay? Like Taylor Swift said, just shake them off. All right? Shake off the sleepies, slap yourself if you need to, and just go ahead and wake up. You're here for a reason. And you're going to hear this morning about a man who was involved in a great project. He had an incredible task before him. And we started this series at the beginning of the year, and if you're just coming into it right now, I'm going to do my best to make you feel like you haven't missed a beat. But this guy, Nehemiah, yeah, he's got a funny name. His name is Nehemiah, and he's in the middle of a great project of rebuilding the wall in Jerusalem, okay? And he's been far away, and he goes back home, and he's got this great project before him, but there's some opposition that's happening. There's some opposition that's occurring. There's some people that really don't want him to succeed. But Nehemiah continues with his task, continues with his vision of rebuilding the wall. Okay? And so that leads us to really Nehemiah 7. I'm gonna kind of work backward, if you will. So hang in there with me. So Nehemiah 7, it takes us to Nehemiah 7. I'm going to sum up Nehemiah 7 really fast for you, okay? Nehemiah 7, the wall is completed. They finished the wall in 52 days. They built a wall that took them 150 years to build in 52 days. How do you like them apples? Wow. 52 days they rebuild the wall. And Nehemiah realizes, man, I need to put somebody in charge. So he puts this godly man, God-fearing man in charge of everything there in Jerusalem. And then they realize that the city is really big, that the walls are finished, and that the city's kind of empty. You know? You ever built something and looked around and said, wow, that's really big, but now we need to fill it up? Hint, hint. City's empty. And so we need to get people in here. And so Nehemiah rallies the community, and you got all these names that you're going to see. Go ahead and read them. Read them at home. You know, of all these names that you're going to find, okay, in Nehemiah 7. And he rallies a community of people to come back and populate Jerusalem. And they populate Jerusalem. That's chapter 7. But something huge, something happened in Nehemiah 6. Something happened, like Nehemiah 6, and we're going to read it, but it begins with Nehemiah talking about being almost done with the wall. Like all the wall had been done, they hadn't finished the gates and the doors yet. That's the only thing that needed to happen. Between Nehemiah 6 and Nehemiah 7, when he finishes everything, the gates and the doors, something happens. I call it the big D. The big D, the notorious big D. Not the notorious B-I-G. But the notorious big D, and that's distractions. Distractions occur. And so we're going to read Nehemiah 6, and then I'm going to talk to you for a little bit. And you'll get to go home and pig out on your lunch. All right, here we go. When word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. Here's the message from the opposition, right? Here's the message from the opposition. And of course, you know, as we've said before, opposition really means thank you. Thank you. Opportunity. Opportunity. So, this is the message. Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me, so I sent messengers to them with this reply. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Four times I sent the message, and each time I gave them the same answer. Then the fifth time, Sanballat sent his aide to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter in which was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it's true that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you're about to become their king and have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now, this report will get back to the king back in Persia, right? So come, let us meet together. So they're saying, Nehemiah, you're planning something, you're scheming something here, and the king back home is not going to be happy. So you should be scared. I sent in this reply. Nothing like what you're saying is happening. Rubbish, right? Called them on the bluff. You're just making it up out in your head, out of your head. You're just making this thing up. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and I will not complete it. It will not be completed. But I prayed. Now strengthen my hands. I love that. Simple phrase. Right there in the middle of everything. He prays. Strengthen my hands. Strengthen my hands. One day I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Delaiah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in at his home. And he said, let us meet in the house of God inside the temple and let us close the temple doors because the men are coming to kill you. By night, they're coming to kill you. Verse 11, but I said, should a man like me run away Should a man like me run away? Or should someone like me go into the temple to save his life? Listen to what he says. I will not go. I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this. What's the this? The this is, let me just throw this in there real quick. If Nehemiah entered the temple, he would be sinning because he was just a layman. He was not a priest. And so he'd be discredited. His leadership would be questioned. His integrity would be ruined. He says, I'm not going to do it. Let's keep going. Verse 14, remember Tobiah and Sanballat, my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophet Noadiah and how she and the rest of the prophets have been trying to intimidate me. So the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. Verse 16, when all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. Also, in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him, since he was son-in-law to Shechaniah, son of Arah, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshulam, son of Berechiah. Verse 19. Moreover, they kept reporting to me his good deeds, and then telling him what I said. And Tobiah sent letters to intimidate me. Haters will hate at the sign of success. If you're even close or hinting that you're up to something good and something successful, haters gonna hate. And players gonna play, right? So shake it off. One of the greatest theologians of our time. Wait, yeah, I'm not even done yet. You're going to see some other guys. But haters will hate at the sign of success. You know who I'm talking about. You've had them in your life. They just want to distract you so they can destroy you. They want to destroy you emotionally, right? Man, if I could just get into their emotions, make them feel terrible, make them feel bad about themselves, that they're not doing any good. They want to destroy you physically, man. If we could just, you know, hurt them in some way. They want to destroy you mentally. Spiritually. You know who I'm talking about because you've had, maybe you've got some of those people right now in your life. You just got haters in your life. You just got haters. I used to love one of my kids in the youth group. One day she was at church and she was wearing her sunglasses and I was just like, hey, like, I see you wearing your sunglasses in a lot of places. Especially like when I go to visit your school, you're wearing your sunglasses in the hallway. What's going on? And she said, Carlos, those are just my hater blockers. You know, I just got no time for haters. You know, those are just my hater blockers. They're out there. You got them. I got them. People are just don't want you to succeed. They want to destroy your integrity. They want to destroy you physically. They just want to distract you in any way, shape, or form possible. Period. Haters are going to use fear to freeze your projects. They're going to intimidate you. They're going to cause you to be fearful about the things that you do or don't do. They're going to say, hey, you better watch out. This is not good. You better not do this. You're going to get in trouble. You're going to get fired. You better not talk about God. You better not do this. Fear. Fear will freeze the project. And haters will do that. Fear distracts us, doesn't it? You've been so afraid about something, you think about it. Man, what's going to happen? What's going to go on? What's going to... And it just controls your life, whether it's something at school or something at work or something at home or even something at church or in your community or in the country. Man, what's going to happen to our country? What's going to happen to... Oh, my goodness. You know, distracted. The reality is that fear, when it distracts us, it causes us to make poor decisions. It does. And that's what they wanted Nehemiah to do, to make a poor decision. Yes, I'll go down and meet you killed. Yes, I'll go to the temple because I'm going to hide sinning. When we're afraid and make poor decisions, we lean into self-preservation. We lean into selfishness. We lean into sin. And what Nehemiah is saying is, I know that's not the answer. There's a better answer for that in your life right now. Because yes, you have haters right now. There are things happening in your life right now that God's trying to rebuild. There's things happening right now that God's got you in a great project for Him about. I don't know what it is. It could be your marriage that He's trying to rebuild. It could be one of your children that He's trying to rebuild your relationship with them. It could be anything right now in your life that God is trying to rebuild. But there will be haters and there will be fear. You're in a great project right now. I don't know exactly what that may even mean or look like. And if I could tell each and every one of you and look in your eyes one at a time, I would. And I would say, you are in a great project right now. I don't care if you're 12, 22, 32, 82. I don't care how old you are. You are in a great project right now with God. And I hope you believe it. I hope you do. There's something that God's trying to do right now in your life. Maybe you're too distracted to see it. And this project is the greatest thing going on right now in your life. It is. It's not your career. It's not college. It's not who you're dating. Oh, she's so beautiful. She's the greatest thing happening for me right now. No, she's not. No. The greatest thing happening right now in your life is what God is trying to do. God is trying to help you rebuild something. Lean into God. I love what Ephesians chapter 2 verse 10 says, that we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works. We are God's workmanship. God is working something in us. He's doing something in us. He's rebuilding something in us and around us and through us for a greater good. But to see this great project that God's got you in right now, something's going to happen. Like, to be able to see this project come to fruition, something is going to happen. And I'm going to tell you right now what it is. And here it is. The greatest, I guess, not the greatest, but some of the greatest theologians that I just discovered, really, from the 80s, were these two guys right here. And I don't know if you know who they are. I love, the mullets are just amazing right now. I want one of those. You know who that is, Darrell Hall and John Oates. Okay? They said something that Nehemiah said thousands of years ago, and it's in a song, and the song says, I can't go for that, no can do. Hey, you can clap. Go ahead, church, you can clap. I can't go for that, no can do. Do. Titus chapter 2. He writes, for the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, and it teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and live a righteous, godly life in this evil world. I can't go for that. No can do. Nehemiah leaned into God. He didn't lean into his fears. He didn't lean into the distractions. He leaned into God and he said, God, strengthen my hands.
give me strength. He leaned into God and he said, God, give me mental clarity. He said, God, give me spiritual courage. Because you see, you are going to need physical strength to be able to say, I can't go for that. No can do. You're going to need to be able to flesh that out, to be able to say no to the distractions. It's easy to say in your mind, no, I'm not going to be distracted. I'm going to say no to that. But it's a completely other thing to live it out. And you're going to need God's strength. You're going to need mental clarity. How do you think Nehemiah was able to know that they were all trying to scheme this whole time, that they were trying to lure him? He had mental clarity because God had given him mental clarity. And some of you right now need some mental clarity. You're all confused. You don't know what's going up, what's going down. You don't know what's happening with your life, with your marriage, with your kids, with your finances. And you need some mental clarity. I'm just saying it how I'm saying it. I've been there before too. We're all in this together, right, church? But are you leaning into God for mental clarity? And are you leaning into God for spiritual courage? You know what kind of courage it took Nehemiah to say, no, I'm not going to go in the temple because that would be a sin. And, you know, his life was in danger. And he said, no, I'm not. I'm not going to do it. Because it will discredit who I am. Are you worried about how people see you? Are you concerned about being discredited? And maybe not just you, but maybe how about the church, maybe discrediting the church or God because of your actions. He thought about those things. He did. So here goes. I'm going to wrap up. I got to wrap up quickly because I told you I'd let you out somewhat early. From now on till Easter, I want you to do two things for me. From now on till Easter, I want you to lean into God with me. I want us all as a congregation to lean into God in some very specific ways. Hopefully you were given one of these cards right here. Okay. The first way I want you to lean into God is lean into God by speaking to God, praying to God. Now, listen very carefully, because a lot of times we Christians use prayer as some kind of spiritual procrastination. Like, Lord, just give me that opportunity. Lord, just help me out with this. Lord, give me the strength for this. But all we're doing is just procrastinating. When all we need to do is just do it, right? And so what I want you to do is, in this card, you've got a blank box, a white box. And there's a statement above that that says what? Say it out loud. What is it that you are going to say no to between now and Easter? Is it Facebook? I mean, are you so distracted by Facebook? I mean, you're at work? Oh, Facebook. In bus? Oh, Facebook. I mean, is it Facebook? I don't know. It could be Facebook. I don't know what. What is it? I don't know. But you figure out what that is, what you're going to say no to between now and Easter, and lean into God and pray and ask for strength. Ask for mental clarity. Ask for spiritual courage. And when you say no to these things, you know what? Draw near to God. Lean into God more. Second part of leaning into God. Let Him speak to you. Let Him speak to you. Between now and Easter, you have a great opportunity. Go ahead and go to the slide with the YouVersion app. There you go. Thank you. Between now and Easter, you have a great opportunity. If you don't use this, how many of you use this app right here? Raise your hand. Okay, great. If you don't use it, if you don't have a smartphone and have it on your smartphone, you can go to that website and download it on your computer. But what I want you to do is download that app on your smartphone if you don't have it. In it, you're going to go to Bible Plans. You could create your own account. There's even a Pittman Road Church account that you can go into and log on and make notes after you read the chapters that you're going to be reading every day between now and Easter. Okay? And so you download the app, you'll go to Bible Plans, and this is the plan I want you to look for. Here it is. You ready? It's real easy. It's called the gospel. We're going to lean into Jesus together between now and Easter. 30 days. I think each day you read one or two or three chapters. Three chapters. You read one chapter in the morning, one chapter in the afternoon, one chapter in the evening. And you can start day one today. Lean into God, folks. Lean into God. God's got a great project for you. But we got to lean into Him. We do. Imagine what life would look like for you. Say, in your home or at work or in any area of your life if distractions were non-existent. I mean, how focused would you be? Imagine, but we know that's not realistic. There will be distractions. But imagine if we said to all those distractions, I can't go for that. Because God is doing something greater. And it's greater than me. It's greater than what's even going on around me and in my life and my future. It's greater than that. So I can't go for that. No can do. Imagine what life would look like. In 2013, my wife and I set out to pray and lean into God because we needed answers. We didn't know where we were going. We knew God was calling us somewhere. And we leaned into God and prayed. And prayed some more. And prayed again. And listened to Him. And listened to people who were godly and who God was using to speak to us through them. And something wonderful happened. He gave us direction and guidance. But there were distractions. There were. They didn't just disappear. But here we are. Thank you. The greatest project to impact humanity was started by Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago. He had distractions too. He had haters too. And haters hated. And players played. And Jesus just shook it off. And He went to a cross to die for you and I and take our sins so that we can have the hope of life, not just in heaven, but here too, and have purpose and meaning and joy and peace. God's doing a great project in you. He is. But we got to lean into Him. We got to lean into Him. This church, God's doing something great in this church. He wants to see this church be a place where His love is experienced, known, and shared by all. And it's not going to happen unless we lean into Him. We can't just say it. We can't just say, hey, that's the place we want to be. And just go on our merry way. We need to seek Him and lean into Him and speak to Him and let Him speak to us. And I'm just going to say it right now. If you've just been distracted by things, distracted by your own, you know, thoughts about what the future holds and what's going on, I just want you to lean into God. Just lean into God. Download the YouVersion app. Get into the Bible. Gospel plan, 30-day plan. Get this card. Write something on there that you're going to say no to between now and Easter. Say yes to Jesus. If you don't know Christ, you have a great opportunity here. He's the Savior of the world. He's my best friend. He's my big brother. And He loves me tremendously, despite how messed up I may be. This morning, He's there waiting for you with open arms as well. We typically sing a song, and if you have any kind of request, if you want a prayer, if you want to be baptized, if you want to schedule Bible studies, whatever it is, we want to be able to serve and help you and minister to you. There are going to be a couple of our shepherds, our leaders up here, and you're more than welcome to come forward, and we'll try to assist you in the best way possible. God bless you, church.